Good evening and welcome. This is the May 12, 2014 regular school board meeting for Glen Ellyn School District 41. The time is 7:35. I call the meeting to order. Mr. Ellis, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mrs. Stecker, roll call, please.
Mr. Escalante.
Here.
Mr. Alger.
Here.
Here.
Nelson.
Here.
Mr. Ellis.
Here.
Here. Public participation. Is there anyone that would like to speak? Okay. Apparently we have one. All right. So I'd like to remind members of the audience that speakers should identify themselves, complete a public participation form, and limit their comments to not more than 3 minutes. Just go ahead and turn in while I'm talking, and we can be done. And anyone else who wishes to speak, go ahead and take the opportunity now to turn in their green sheets, please. Personal complaints and criticism about staff members, students, or other members of the District 41 community should be initiated privately with the appropriate district representative. Also, profanity, interruption, and or interference with the orderly conduct of the meeting are not permitted. All questions raised will be forwarded to the appropriate D41 staff representative for a response if a response is warranted. Is there anyone present that would like to address the board? Yes, there is. Who? Whenever you're ready.
That would be me.
Okay.
My name is Teresa Millich, and I'm a fourth grader at Forest Glen and eighth grader at Hadley. I'm also a senior OD consultant with the American Medical Association. And I wanted to say that many parents, such as me, were extremely disturbed to learn that 9 young boys at my son's school were able to view porn on either school equipment or on a personal electronic device on school property. And this breach was only discovered as a result of porn being shared with boys on the playground. I'm especially shocked that elementary school age kids have access to the internet at a level in which access to porn or other highly inappropriate images would even be a remote possibility.
Can we just delay for
one second?
Can we delay for 1 second, please?
Oh. I apologize. I'm sorry.
No, just delay.
Sorry. We're just going to take it out in the hallway.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you for noticing that. Thank you,
sorry,
Sharon. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. The note from Dr. Gordon did not outline any additional actions that will be taken to assure parents that their grade school children would not be exposed to porn or other inappropriate material in the future. In fact, his note specifically indicated that even though the district internet filter is updated daily, it can't effectively keep up with or block all sites with sexually explicit material. As a parent of a 10-year-old boy, I am extremely uncomfortable knowing that at any given time, my child can go to school and be exposed to porn. So my question to Dr. Gordon, as well as the board tonight, is are you essentially saying that it is okay for our elementary kids in D41 to potentially access porn or sexually explicit material on school computers? Are you comfortable with the liability created by the school by putting in a system that you know will allow some kids access to porn? The note also indicated that there were only a few incidents that occurred over the past 7 years. Has the district done a recent log history of the sites that the kids are browsing and searching? About a month ago, my son was in class and was shown images of naked women in his fourth grade class by a student who simply put in naked girls on Google Images. And he was sharing with the other friends how to do that, but my son was the lucky one who got to see all the pictures. A second grader at a different D41 elementary school simply looked up the human body and was shown sketches. Now, I say sketches, but they were of a naked man and woman. And both were extremely uncomfortable. We just had the kids go out. They're uncomfortable. You're uncomfortable. And they were uncomfortable, and they didn't tell their teachers. So we rely on the parents. I spoke to the director of enterprise infrastructure at the AMA, because this is an area that's clearly out of my element, who has 25 years' experience in IT. And I got his perspective, which I think also presents the district with an option for ensuring that we protect our children from accessing porn on school equipment. He agreed that there's no internet filter, no matter how often it's updated, can effectively keep up with or block all sites with sexually explicit material. Since the administration has also acknowledged this, then one alternative, he suggested, is to create an allow list of websites managed by the school or teachers. So the teachers can put websites that they feel are acceptable or appropriate for elementary school age kids. And he mentioned the vast majority of work done by grammar school age children does not require widespread access to the internet. And I have to say, I totally agree with him on that. And that separate computers with more supervision could be set up or unlocked by a teacher where more access is needed. And he also noted, which I thought was interesting, he did a quick Google internet search, and it showed him a public link with instructions on how to bypass the web filters of schools who are using Intel Lightspeed filters.
Teresa, that's time. Could you sum up and then maybe give us your...
It might help that the district puts greater controls and policies in place that are more conducive to an elementary school setting to show that they are more concerned about protecting all children, all of our children, than finding it acceptable to risk this event from happening again. Thank you.
Thank you. I can tell you that I can safely speak for the board when we realize this is a very serious issue. I know Dr. Gordon has jotted down your questions, and I'm sure that he'll... respond to you as well as the community on this issue.
I appreciate that.
Thank you. Anyone else, Mrs. Stecker? Okay. Presentations, reports, and initiatives. We'll start with the Hadley Library Media Center. Mr. A. There you go. Hi, Chris.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Chris Abbott. And I'm really lucky to be the library media specialist here at Hadley because this is my classroom. So I think I can safely say, sorry, colleagues, that I probably have the best space in the building. And it's a great, it's a pleasure to be here. And it's been a long road to come here. So tonight I'm just going to take a few minutes to talk about the past school year, since this is the inaugural year of this space. And I thought probably the best way to do so would be to go around to the different rooms and talk about the activities that have taken place here and talk about sort of how they tie into your children's learning. So we'll start off with the main floor where we're sitting right now. So besides tonight's board meeting, there's a lot of other activities that happen on a daily basis. One of those, as you might suspect, in the library is research. The Common Core is demanding more and more research of our students, and this is the perfect setting in which that research can take place. So here you see students at 7th grade social studies. They're doing a research project. They can use the technology. They have myself as a resource to help facilitate that. I collaborate with the teachers to determine exactly what the research needs are. And then between myself and the classroom teachers, we're able to direct the students to appropriate information, to credible information, using the print and non-print resources that we have here in the library. So it's a really nice space for kids to spread out their research and to get to the appropriate places in which to find the answers to the research questions. We also have had the opportunity to bring in some great guest speakers in this picture. We have an NFL football player, name I can't recall right now. Kelly. Thank you.
Philadelphia Eagles.
There you go. So he was able to come in and talk to the 7th graders on one of our team building days. So this is a very nice venue in which to welcome in guests from the outside and make those important connections to the outside community. It's also been a great space for professional development. This picture, this is when we hosted a two-day PBL initiative that's going to be enrolled here in district next year. And we invited Dr. Gordon's former colleagues from Denver to come in and talk to groups of teachers about what that looks like in their school And it's nice because the presenters have the technology, obviously, to present. But then we have workspace for teachers to have breakout discussions, small group work, and they're the facilitators. Were able to move around easily. And still we had kids coming through, so it wasn't as if we were completely shut down. We still had activities going on in the other areas. And that's just one example of the professional development that's taking place here in this school year. Moving on over here, we have three small group, what we like to call collaboration rooms. And those are used in a variety of ways. I've been really happy to see this, where small groups are coming down from different classrooms, where the teacher stays in the classroom, and then small groups can go into these rooms and differentiate projects according to the teacher can give them choices. So in spirit of trying to get out of the whole class instruction, everybody's doing the same thing at the same time, we now have the space to afford students that possibility. So, whereas in years past, you might find students out in the hallway working, that's a thing of the past. Now they have a great place to go and do those small group projects. And professional collaboration also takes place in these rooms. PLCs can use that space to meet, to collaborate. If they can't access a classroom, because our classrooms are such busy places, oftentimes this is a great place for those teachers to come and collaborate. We all know that testing is high stakes. ISATs, PARC next year, MAP testing. And we have a responsibility to make sure that our 504 students, our IEP students, our ELL students have a place in which their needs can be met, their alternative testing needs. So this space, the small rooms, and even some of the space out here on the main floor, really gives those students the best opportunity for them to perform in different situations. So it's been nice to have that ability. And we also can do some specialized instruction in those small group rooms. Teachers in the MIP program, the GIP program, can bring down one or two students, work with them individually, and really target the types of instruction that they need. And then probably one of my most favorites, I guess it just happened last week, where the teachers were able to get massages courtesy of the PTA during Staff Appreciation Week. They had five short 5-minute massage opportunities. And so that's one of the more creative uses for that. When Mr. Diamond came to me in the morning, I said, hey, why not? Research, massage, it all sort of rolls in together. So it was nice to have that space. So moving on to the collaboration rooms, to the quiet reading room, which is right here. Obviously, its purpose is for quiet reading. And so students can come in during their literacy classes, before school, after school, lunch, skills class. During Take 10 time, even, they can come and do some quiet reading. And Mr. Diamond, don't worry, that student in the foreground is reading a book on his phone. I know you got your eyes on him. He's reading a book from our ebook collection on his iPhone. I wanted to verify that after I took the picture. Indeed he was. Indeed he was. So then moving back in that area there, what we call the presentation room, a lot of great uses in that space. And if you get the opportunity tonight, walk in there and just go down in the center. The acoustics are amazing. And when students get down there for a variety of purposes, which I'll go over, they really feel special. Giving a presentation there in that setting has a much different feel than giving a presentation in the classroom. So it's really designed. It's really designed for student space. Oops. Projection. Hold on a second. I don't know if there's any hot hands tonight. We can maybe dial it up. Okay, so in this picture, this was a whole classroom project where students were creating, they were doing a whole project design, and they were just brainstorming ideas, and they were looking at each other's ideas, and they love to write on the walls. It's one of their favorite things to do. And this was really a neat activity to see of her and not get in trouble. They get in trouble for writing on the walls. They really enjoy doing that. It's also a performance space. So this is Mr. Marchese's exploratory guitar class. And we actually recorded the student performance. This was the last day of that exploratory. We wanted to bring them in, sort of as a cumulative experience for them. And we recorded, I'll talk about that in a few minutes, but I've seen dramatic readings happen in there, skits, reader's theater. So it's been a nice space for live performance, too. And it also works for whole group instructions. We have a projection system, a very nice high-end projection system, similar to here, that goes up onto the white space. So teachers can present something multimedia. Kids can write on the walls and spread out. And it's really a nice place to screen some of those things, those technology pieces that teachers want the kids to experience. Other uses for the presentation room include the fact that it does have wireless projection. Miss Anderson, our art teacher, comes in for an activity where the kids create a piece of art on the iPads that we use here in the library. And kids don't even have to leave their seat. They just beam it up to the wall. And other kids can critique it, give feedback. And it's a nice wireless system. You don't have to worry about wires or things like that. It's a nice system for kids just to project wirelessly. Multimedia presentations. We have a lot of budding filmmakers here at Hadley. The Mac Lab, which I'll talk about next, is a place where they create it. They're also doing narrated slideshow for GarageBand creations, and they love to put it on the big screen in that room and show it to their classmates, and then ultimately publish that probably, you know, on the blog, which I'll talk about too towards the end. Professional development is another theme that's been running throughout this whole space, and that does take place in that room as well. And then moving on to the Mac Lab. This is where, when we were planning a few years ago, we knew that a one-to-one initiative might be coming down the road. We thought it might be a cloud-based operating system, like the Chromebooks. So we asked ourselves, well, what sort of technology might kids need access to that that device wouldn't necessarily provide? The Mac Lab and the operating system that the Apples use really gives kids a chance to use higher-end multimedia software so that they can create their iMovies, their narrated slideshow where they have images and a voiceover narration. I've seen comic strips and even comic books come out of that room. Some great animations. So some really creative things coming from that space and the creative minds of the students. There are 16 computers in there, and we did that purposely to encourage, as I said before, not everybody in the classroom doing the same thing at the same time. So this was actually a group of boys who came down, was working on a project where the final product was a movie. The other kids in the class were doing other things. A paper was one option, a poster, but they chose the technology piece, and they were able to come down, and they were focused, and they presented a great iMovie in that space that we talked about. So the Mac Lab has had some great uses. Then the sound booths within the Mac Lab have also afforded some great opportunities. The music department uses Smart Music as an app. It's available on our iPad, so a band or an orchestra student can come in with their instrument, grab an iPad, go into the sound booth, record their piece to be accessed at a later time by their music teacher. So they don't have to spend time during instructional class time or during the day to do that. They can come into the sound room, and then the teacher can access it at a later time. Very recently, we've had a lot of students recording pieces that they write. This is a girl who is recording an essay. There's been poetry readings. The seventh graders are going to be creating a mystery radio show in the next few weeks. And we have the booths and the technology and the equipment to do that. And I'm happy to say that all of those recordings have been turned into what we call Habitcats, just launched a few weeks ago. And this is available in the iTunes store. So when kids find out that their recording is going to end up in the iTunes store, they're really motivated to create and put forth their work. So it's a nice publishing opportunity for those audio recordings. Last, but certainly not least, one of my favorite topics, books. And we are, first and foremost, a library. So, as you can see, we have a tremendous collection. I'm very proud. I work very hard to get what I think are great books that match our kids and their interests. They're diverse. They meet various reading levels. And we're very proud of that collection. And as of today, we have had 17,081 checkouts during the school year. That translates into 100 books going out to kids each day. And we work very hard on making the books attractive. We have a display, maybe you can take a look at it later. Those are books that have been turned into movies. And we did some writing on the glass to promote those books, so kids enjoy those displays. And easy access to books. If those of you who remember the old library, we had stacks that were taller than I was, and kids couldn't reach them, couldn't see them. Lots of dust, hadn't been moved in years. Now, they're at eye level of the students. They can move in and out of the aisles very easily, and we put the new ones on top so they can see those and display those. So really, we've made it very easy for kids to come in here and get the books that they need them in our effort to promote love of reading, love of literature. And we have a flexible checkout. So kids, used to be they can only come during their literacy class. Now they can come before school, after school, lunch even, skills class, take 10. So they have a variety of ways in which to get those books. If you're interested in some of the work that I've been talking about, those creative pieces that kids have been publishing, I'd like to highlight those on the LMC blog. So go ahead and take a look at that sometime, and you can see research projects, the podcasts that I was talking about, iBooks that kids create. So it's really a space where I like to promote student work. This is a Google Calendar. We reserve the space using Google Calendar, so teachers can reserve the space. They can also come in flexibly. This is the month of May, so you can see it's very busy here. And unofficially, this was not scientific by any means, but by going back over through the months, I sort of counted up and looked to see what our capacity was. And we're about 96%. So what that means is 96% of the school days, some part of this library has been used. The 4% is probably attributed to sick days and testing days. So anytime you come in here on a daily basis, you're going to see some action happening in some form or another. So in closing, I just want to say, like I said, it's about 2 years ago where we started planning for this space. Mrs. Carlson and Mr. Cicerella were on that committee. And I think I can say for the staff, too, that the expectations have been exceeded. And the exciting thing, there's another level to go. With the PBL initiative that's coming, I think it's a great pairing, this space and the objectives of the PBL learning experience. We're just going to keep taking off. So I have high expectations for the space and learning that's going to happen here. So I really want to thank everyone involved for making this a reality. So, thank you. I'm happy to entertain questions, or you can certainly feel free to contact me, email, or stop down at any time.
Any questions for Chris? Any comments?
Just a couple quick comments. When we were planning this space, one of the questions of board members was, how do we know that it's going to be utilized in kind of the vision that you have, Chris? And I know that I've talked to you about this, and clearly, the space is exceeding expectations. I was in on a half a day when some kids were in, not for the speaker that day, but there were some other things going on in the presentation room. And just observing their respect for the space, number one, which I think is also important, that these are highly traveled, highly used spaces. And I think when kids see, that there's been support put in for their learning, that there is a different level of respect. So I asked a couple of teachers, and they say that too. When they come in here, it's go to where you need to go, get to work, and it's more purposed than certainly the other space was. The other thing is I've been on the blog, and I actually listened to your reading of a book.
Oh.
It was one of the Caudill winners. And
did you have trouble? Because I think that line is on.
Well, it was in actually preparation because I knew you were coming, and so I thought, let me take a peek at this. But it's just great stuff, and I agree with you, great incentive for kids who are doing a lot of this at home with iMovie and Adobe and all this other stuff, but then could translate that. And if we can get kids published in seventh and eighth grade, what a great opportunity when they go into high school. So thanks for your focus on this.
Thank you for those kind of comments.
Yeah.
Any other comments?
I'd have to just jump in here just to sing Chris's praise of our true model of what a teacher librarian can be and should be for our entire district. He really embodies all that it can be, as he was demonstrating here. He is not the librarian of old, where we're just checking out books and those pieces. He's really engaging kids in a variety of manners, and he's really flexible, learning, changing, adapting, just to make it that space. A library should truly be that hub of the school, that heartbeat, and here it absolutely is. And so I just appreciate all of your work on a daily basis, and I know the faculty here and the students would agree with me to just thank you for everything you're doing for our students, our community, and our district. You're a real inspiration, so I appreciate everything you do for us.
Thank you. That's very much appreciated. It's very nice.
I just want to add to Erica's comments a little bit. As board members, we see numbers on the page, we see drawings. We don't really get to see what the end game is, and you have obviously brought this space to life, and every ounce of it is being used in a fantastic way. So, personally, I want to thank you as well.
Thank you. That's very nice.
So have we embarrassed you enough, Chris?
Yeah. Chris really loves this part of the presentation. Yeah, the kids are like, let us stack some cups, baby.
I have a few sentences about what's happening district-wide with the PTA, and then I will introduce our award-winning cup staff. All the district PTAs are in the process right now of installing new executive committee members, and those transition meetings are happening. At Churchill recently, they hosted all the fifth graders across the district for the fifth grade mixer. I was honored to be chaperone, I guess, and I enjoyed it very much. They seem to be having a great time. Thank you so much to Churchill for doing that for the district for our kids. Hadley here also, as you saw, recently had staff appreciation week, and at Lincoln, they had a senior tea recently, so they had fifth graders greet the students, greet the seniors, serve tea and snacks, perform songs for them, and have a conversation. They also recently had radio night and fitness night. Both Forest Glen and Franklin recently had their high interest day. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to our award-winning Cup Staffy presenter. He was recently given an award, a programming award, from the regional PTA, the DuPage West region. So we're very proud of him. And we'll let him tell us why.
Okay, so I started this Staffy Club by myself. Me and my friend Joe and my friend Nick had been like doing speech session, and we really liked it, so we wanted to make it club and open it up to more people. So as you can see, these aren't regular cups. They have holes in them for ventilation, because when you put them down, you're trying to go fast, so you don't want the air to slow you down. And so you're trying to beat your best scores. This is the
Thank you.
the first competitive back. It's called a free therapy.
Before you guys go, could you tell us your name so we didn't catch it?
Hi, I'm Dean Carroll.
What grade are you in? What school are you in?
I'm in fourth grade at Ben Franklin.
Okay.
And I'm Lily Carroll, and I'm in second grade at Ben Franklin. I'm John Ford, and I'm in second grade at Ben Franklin. I'm in fourth and I'm in second grade at Ben Franklin.
Nice. Very impressive, you guys.
Yeah, way to go. Thank you for coming out.
And by the way, that was Sharon Ick for the PT Executive Council update.
Yes. And thank you so much for coming out.
Sharon's PTA president at Ben Franklin?
I am outgoing.
Out.
Outgoing. Okay. Well, for the next 10 minutes, you're still the president.
Thank you.
Okay, discussion items. The 2013-2014 amended budget and amended budget display. Is that...
I'm just trying to find Bob anyway, amongst the crowd. Oh, there you are.
Hi, Bob.
So what you have this evening is the amended budget, the proposed amended budget for 2013-14. And two reasons that we are requesting to have this amended budget presented this evening as well as for your approval is anytime we exceed a particular expenditure or revenue item by greater than 10%, we are expected to require the file on the budget. We have two such events this year. First of all, we had the $7 million in capital funding as a result of the construction project at the elementary level. And then second of all, we had increased expenditures as a result of the capital project for the professional services for our architects and our construction managers. So for those two reasons, we are requesting that we file an amended budget. We'd like your approval to begin posting and processing of that budget. And it'll be brought back to the Board of Education for approval at our second board meeting in June, which is pretty We don't do this frequently, but we did it for two reasons that were unknown to us originally when the budget was presented and passed by the board meeting.
Was this discussed at the finance meeting tonight?
Two weeks ago.
Okay. Any questions for Bob at this time?
Pretty straightforward.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Bob. The action items, the consent agenda. Any items board members would like removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately? Hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda, which includes the human resources personnel report, including employment recommendations, resignation, retirement, administrator compensation, and superintendent's compensation, and other matters, including the approval of the board meeting minutes from the April 28, 2014 regular board meeting, the April 28, 2014 regular board meeting closed session minutes, and the May 5, 2014 special board meeting. May I have a motion, please?
Second.
Is that motion by Mr. Ellis? Second by Mr. Elger. Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Mr. Elger?
Yes.
Mr. Buchanan?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes. Motion carries. Okay, superintendent's recommendations. At the April 28th meeting, the board discussed the following 10 recommendations. And we'll just go through one by one. The first one is the 21st Century Initiative's recommendation. Keeping the elementary schedule for next year the same as it is this year and delaying the extension of multi-age by 1 year. The implementation schedule would resume in the 2015-2016 school year with multi-age for literacy social studies in grades 2 and 3 and multi-age in math STEAM for grades 2 and 3 and grades 4 and 5 beginning in the 2016-2017 school year. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation?
So moved.
Motion by Mrs. Nelson, second by Mr. Escalante. Any discussion? Okay.
I just want to make a quick follow-up. I know we've talked about this for members of the community who are here, but also those who listen to the tape. We had a pretty intensive discussion around it. And in follow-up, Dr. Gordon sent to the board his follow-up communication around what will be included in the reporting out, which I'm satisfied with. But in particular, that we do a that there is a follow-up on our teacher leaders and how some of that that piece of it, which we talked about for professional development, is going to be moved forward. So, you know, with that in particular, I'm comfortable with accepting the recommendation.
Okay. Any other discussion? We've discussed this at a couple of meetings. I personally think it's been fully vetted. So, roll call, please, Mrs. Tucker.
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Elder?
Yes. Motion carries. Okay. The 2013-2014 final school calendar. Designated Monday, July 9, 2014, as the last attendance day for all half-day programs, kindergarten, pre-kindergarten, and early childhood. Tuesday, June 10, 2014, as the last student attendance for grades 1 through 8 with a noon dismissal. And Wednesday, June 11, 2013, the last teacher workday. Graduation for Haley Junior High School 8th grade students will be held Tuesday, June 10, 2014, 7:30 p.m. at Glenbard West High School. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation? Motion by Mr. Ellis.
Second.
Second by Mrs. Nelson. Any discussion? Okay. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Buchanan?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Elger?
Yes.
Black.
Yes. Motion carries. The 2014-2015 copier paper bid results. Copier paper bid from Unisource of $27.45 per case, based on delivery of 1,824 cases over the course of the school year. The total cost will be $50,068.80. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation?
Motion. Second.
Motion by Mr. Ellis, second by Mr. Elger. Any discussion on this? Okay. Roll call, please.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Bochensky?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Elger?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Yes, motion carries. The 2014 Mobile Classroom Relocation Bid Award, Bid Packet Number 2. The bid recommendation in the amount of $256,866 related to the demolition, preparation, and relocation of existing portable classrooms. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation?
Motion.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Bochensky, second by Mr. Escalante. Any discussion?
Just a quick reminder, part of this package included moving, I think it's a portable at Lincoln, in order to do it with the whole package versus having to wait. Is that correct? So that's still in here. At Forest Glen.
At Forest Glen.
Okay.
Correct.
Thank you, because I know we talked about that.
Okay. Any other discussion? Okay, roll call, please.
Mr. Elger.
Yes.
Mr. Bochensky.
Yes.
Mr. Escalante.
Yes.
Mr. Ellis.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, motion carries. The 2014 Miscellaneous Trades Bid Award, Bid Packet Number 3. Bid recommendations for $65,662 in casework and $30,000 in window shades for the Abraham Lincoln and Benjamin Franklin additions.
Motion.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Bochensky, second by Mr. Escalante. Any discussion? Okay, roll call.
Nelson?
Yes.
Yes.
Mr.
Yes.
Mr. Elger?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Glenn?
Yes. Motion carries. The resolution regarding approval of change orders for the 2014-2015 and 2015-2016 school additions construction projects. The resolution altering the change order process for the upcoming elementary addition project to provide the district flexibility to approve changes over $10,000 without prior board approval. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation?
Motion.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Bochensky, second by Mr. Escalante. Any discussion?
I have a two questions, or one point, one comment, and one question. The limit for the Illinois State for law has changed. You know, the first time we went through this, it was 25,000. Law must have changed to 50,000.
Yeah.
So kind of that's the cap we have, the change order, along with the other constraints you have with staying in budget. And I asked this last time, Bob, and the whereases talk about everything, about the length of the project and all that, but in the heart of the resolution, I just don't see the time period in which the resolution allows you to have that. As long as Todd feels comfortable with it, he drafted it, it's fine, but I just wanted to bring that comment forward.
It was written by our attorneys.
Yes.
And it's intended to be used for 14 through 16 construction projects for the elementary school.
Okay.
Yeah.
As long as he feels comfortable.
Just wants the project forward.
It states that in the whereas, so as long as Todd's comfortable with it, I'm good with it.
Any other discussion? It's important to reinforce that this does not affect the overall number, and we will not be able to increase the overall bid packet number. Okay. Roll call, please.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Bochensky?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes. Motion carries. The grant of temporary construction access easement. The intergovernmental agreement for construction easement on the Churchill site through the Park District's Churchill Park property east of the school campus that would allow the district to construct a temporary road to transport construction materials and equipment. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation?
Second.
Was that Mr. Elger? And second by Mr. Escalante. Any discussion? This is obviously for the road access for the Churchill School construction site. Okay. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Bochensky?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Elger?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Yes. Motion carries. The engineering is elementary resources. Purchase of engineering is elementary and materials for Hadley teachers at a cost of $45,774. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation?
Motion.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Ellis, second by Mr. Elger. Any discussion on this?
I just had a quick question on the bottom on page 2 on the additional cost and information. It talks about possible refills, and then it says last sentences. The need for professional development will be determined following Franklin's use of materials. So are the teachers that use these going to do an assessment of the toolkit, and then I suppose Karen would know this.
Yeah.
Sorry, Karen.
Yeah, Franklin is doing a PL right now, and they're using
the water everywhere. Yeah.
So thank you for sitting afternoon and kind of they've gone through things, and I got a quick email, they're great. We really want to know, because some of the feedback I heard around professional development is that it wasn't great, and it's a scripted program.
That they bring, that the company brings
to it. The company
brings,
right. So, and it would be a trainer anyway, that we would kind of look at. So based on feedback from the four Franklin teachers using materials, we'll determine how much we feel like we need to get from an outside source
versus internal. Okay, great. Thank you.
Any other discussion? Okay, roll call, please.
Mr. Elger?
Yes.
Mr. Bochensky?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes. The motion carries. The Hadley Book Room Resources. Purchase of Capstone text sets at a cost of $12,283.66. They have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation.
Motion.
Motion by Mr. Ellis.
Second.
Second by Mrs. Nelson. Any discussion on this?
This we talked about before. This is not books for this library, but books for the room that supports the teachers, right?
Yes, classroom sets. It's about six.
Yep.
Six to eight classroom novel sets.
Okay.
Any other discussion?
Sorry. Say this is to level set some of the lower levels, some of the needs we needed to lift up in terms of some of the...
Correct. High interest, low level.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, roll call, please.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Bochensky?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr.
Yes, motion carries. The 2013-2014 amended budget and amended budget display, which we discussed earlier this evening, may have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation.
Motion. Second.
Motion by Mr. Bochensky, second by Mr. Elger. Any further discussion on this? Okay, roll call, please.
Mr. Ellison?
Yes.
Mr. Bochensky?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes. Motion carries. Okay. Moving on, superintendent's report.
I have three things for you tonight. First one is the enrollment report. This report is consistent with the previous enrollment reports. Class sizes continue to stay stable within each of our schools. Any concerns or questions, board members?
I just wanted to share something that I put out on Glenella News that I thought was kind of interesting, but I'm not familiar with this consumer financial website, so I went online to look at it. It's called NerdWallet. It's pretty interesting, actually. The news brief in the Glenella News was that they cited Glenella as the ninth fastest growing city in Illinois. To determine the rankings, NerdWallet examined growth from 2009 to 2012 in three areas, population, employment, and income, and their matrix is that Glen Allen grew in all three of these categories, and then they identified, you know, how it fell into place. So I thought that was kind of interesting just in terms of our report, because when you look back at the demography study that Casarda redid for us, was it 2012? I think we did a review, right? And that our numbers are just exactly where we were going to be in that plan B. So, you know, and I think it's good news that, you know, we're a fast-growing village, city, and that we have to keep that in mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
I always have questions go through my mind when I read these reports, so I appreciate they're on every other board meeting to review them. With all the talk about full-day kindergarten that we've been having, I keep bringing myself back looking at the kindergarten numbers to first grade, and you see the jump. And we've talked about that. Karen's talked about that with us before. I think it's, you know, I compare last year's kindergarten for 362 and this year's first graders at 375. For me, I like this. You know, I wonder if kids are, you know, do we have a full day kindergarten program at College of DuPage? Is that where we're getting them? Is it just, you know, I'd like to see the analysis over the last couple of years. I just keep with that discussion around full-day kindergarten, mm-hmm. I think it's important to know all aspects of our kindergarten numbers to what we see together in first grade. So
for those families who are boundaried to go to our kindergarten, yeah. Who of those families which choose to go to a private parochial full-day kindergarten?
I don't know that we can get those exact numbers.
No.
We can analyze that there's a jump, and it's 10% or 4% or whatever it is. Maybe this year's number was low.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe in different economic times it's higher. So historic numbers.
Just look at that trend data.
Give me a guide.
Okay.
When I'm wrapping my mind around the full-day kindergarten.
Okay. I'll make sure that's on the next report, because I think that's an interesting piece to look at mm-hmm. over time
yep.
for board members.
See what we get.
Yep.
All right. Thanks, Tom.
Absolutely. Quick note to myself. We had two community listening sessions. They were fairly well attended, where community members were focused on preparing students for the future, the finance facilities, and engagement. We had 38 community members join us for those conversations. Most of them were our parents, but we did have some from different civic organizations within our community, our District 41 community. We also had some grandparents and other individuals from the community. And it was a great opportunity for our community members to come together and have conversations about these three issues. We're still putting together all of the summary data and really looking at, I think one of the bigger questions that came out of it is, how do we engage the larger community? Again, 38 is a nice step. It's a nice first step, but it's still a pretty low overall total. So how do we continue to engage? How do we continue to have these conversations about District 41 with the larger community? However, the 38 people who came, I want to first say thank you for giving us about 2 hours of your time to engage with each other, to have conversations about these topics, and to give us that feedback. You know, pieces we heard were communication. We're seeing some consistent threads between our survey, this conversation, and just other parental emails that I receive or other people receive around, how do we communicate better? How do we continuously give our community from the classroom level to the district level? How do we try to ensure that we're communicating at a high level? So those are pieces that we're going to continue looking at. The finance conversation, again, at both sessions were fascinating because it's very different viewpoints. But overall, the Saturday piece and the previous Wednesday, they recognize that finance ties into everything we do. Ties into everything that we do. Every dollar spent, how does it connect to our mission, vision, and the beliefs about District 41? And truly recognizing that finance does not sit in a bubble by itself. None of the topics sit in a bubble by itself. But overall, how do they interconnect? How do they work together so we continue to have produce students who are these incredibly thoughtful, intelligent students? That truly is that mission. So I was pleased overall. Again, love for more people to attend. But for our first real shot at this, I thought it was a nice first step. Community members gave us feedback on the overall structure, from could you create where you almost have a town hall type of setup first and then transition into the conversation, because they really did like, the community members really did enjoy sitting and trying to work through these problems. So those were some of the recommendations that they brought forward. But the biggest one was, how do we connect with the 80% who don't have students in our buildings? That's a major piece of this conversation. Throughout it, different ideas on academics, where are we going, how are we going to get our kids to be those critical thinkers that we believe in. I just, again, appreciate everybody's time. I appreciate the board members who gave their time to sit and listen for a few moments at each of the tables. And one of the other pieces that came out of it was the engagement tables recommended that we also bring this back to the school level as well. So we hear from the school level and also up to the district level. So you have some nice feedback loops created within your structure of what's occurring within our district. So again, very thankful for the members of the community who showed up. Board members, anybody adding to those pieces?
Well, there's one data point that I thought was interesting, and Karen, Julie shared this with the group, and that, we always talk about the outreach, and part of that is people wanting to be connected from the outside in, too. But she said that we have 6,000, correct me if I'm wrong, Julie, if you're here, that 6,000 subscribe to e-news. So that's much broader than just mm-hmm. our parent base. I mean, we do have people over time who have stayed subscribed, even after they've rolled out of District 41, which I think is great. So that was good to hear. And I got feedback from a neighbor that I reached out to my kind of neighborhood to invite them to go, encourage them to go. And one neighbor who has young kids in the district at Churchill who called me up to say it was really good that I pushed the button and got him there. He works in technology and, just was with one piece of feedback, but that he said it was just a really thoughtful discussion and that he'd be interested in doing some more ongoing work. And I had reached out to Paul and to Sam mm-hmm. to talk about how we might create some ongoing conversation wrapped around, and this was Julie's idea and mine, kind of a PBL, because that's going to need support of the community, and it might be a natural connection to then create some ongoing learning. So I know that Paul has put that on his list of conversations with us as we move further into that, but I thought it was a great opportunity for people to to come and see this space, which is great. Folks are great mm-hmm. about it.
So. One comment that I want to bring up is something to build off of. I don't want to say it's negative, but one of the participants that was there came, and as she was talking to neighbors and friends before she came, she said, "Well, why are you going? It's just going to be the same thing. They're going to ask, and they're not going to do anything." So I think we need to take this opportunity not to reinvent the wheel, but go back to people that have been here a while, administration-wise, and ask the question, we've done this before. Why didn't it work? Did we not follow through? Was there not structure? Was there not milestones? Was there not action items? And then put names to dates and people to names, and we can start driving those things forward to say, okay, what were the themes? What do I... what do you as a superintendent need to put on the 6,000 e-blast that says community listening tour, these were the themes, this is what I heard, next steps are going to be, or any type of that communication. But we need to start driving some of this stuff because we have momentum again, I think. Surveys, community listening tours, attendance. Let's not lose that momentum. And I don't want to say... I don't want to also lose some of the history that we've probably done this before, and some of the administration has been here, and it's like, I can tell you what are your roadblocks, this, this, and this, and you need people to knock those down, and how do we do that? So, again, to move things forward, to take the next step, I'd like to see something like that from you, Paul, or the administration to say, okay.
Those were going to be my summary comments of our actionable steps moving forward, our deliverables, as we like to say. And I think it's important that we take them from that broader viewpoint of the survey. So I appreciate the survey, other feedback, and then this community listening session to really say what has the community said about these issues overall, because it's hard to place it on 38 people. But the survey was a very comprehensive piece of that work. So really setting up what are those action items, what are those deliverables that you could be looking for us to say, you've done this before. You don't do anything, because we definitely heard that very clearly from the community members. It's like, this was great, but so what? And I think for us to truly engage the community, people need to see that these were valuable opportunities, that these were important, that they weren't exactly what you said. They were just Why wasted 2 hours? Administration's going to do, board's going to do whatever they want to do.
I think it's
a great comment.
You know, even the communication is both positive and we can't do it right now due to priorities. You know, if the theme is
yes,
this and this, it's not a priority, or however we structure it, as long as you close the loop to a question, there's closure there to somebody's issue or concern.
I appreciate it, because another one of those feedback loops, I was able to meet with a group of special education parents who have students receiving specialized instruction. And one of their themes, which was consistent with what I brought up tonight, was that communication. How do we create quality tools for parents to engage with? How do they know? I mean, we had a conversation last Tuesday, sometime last week, where we met, and it was this really strong theme across, hey, we got to make sure our website gives some really important information for our parents who are looking for this. You know, I don't need a website listing of all the acronyms. I can Google that anywhere. But what I need is, what is that pathway? What is that direction? If my kid is doing this, and they recognize it can't be specific for each kid, yeah, but give us some general information of that direction. Where are we going? So that's when I start seeing all these themes and trends coming together, is all the work we've done together. These meetings, our surveys, our community listening sessions, but I 100% agree with you. We've got to be able to publicize. Here are the two or three things that we're going to focus on here. We're going to take care of them, and we're going to let you know, and then we're going to move on to other pieces. So I really appreciate that comment.
So I guess what I would add is that I was very pleased, as you mentioned, that it wasn't just parents, that we actually did get people who were either younger couples who didn't yet have kids wondering about where the schools were going, and also people whose children may have already been through here and or maybe never had kids come through the district. And that's a very important part of our constituency, because as people know, the tax bills went out this week or whatever, that they help pay for all of us.
Yeah,
so they, you know, we need to get their voice. We need to get their voice in here. We need to see what their ideas are as well. So I hope we keep building on this.
So in my last piece, it will be on the problem-based learning. Problem-based learning is not something that I brought to the district. Something that, quite honestly, grew very organically from teachers here in District 41 over the last 3 years. The district supported 2 years ago with some professional development to support those teachers, but this has been a piece that really grew from teachers, feeling like that problem-based learning is an important, engaging learning tool or instructional model that they wanted to embrace. We have sent people out to Colorado. Again, my background was with the STEM schools in Adams 12 and their problem-based learning instructional approach, which I felt really, really engaged exactly what District 41 was looking for. I had conversations on that during my interview. That was an important piece from the board at that time, and it continued to be an important piece from our teachers, Karen, and other leaders within our district. We've embraced that work. We've brought people out. They saw the work firsthand, which, again, brought more energy to the table and continued to move us forward. We brought people out from Colorado to train over 60-some-odd teachers and administrators on kind of that foundational piece. They were here with us a day. It was an incredible opportunity, again, bringing more people under the umbrella of what is this, what does it look like, and ensuring that we have consistency. The other piece that I heard from the surveys was everybody needs to have the same kind of training. We've got to say this is our model. The other piece I heard from teachers was stick with it. Get a direction and go. We had a parent here on Saturday who said, you know what? You can hear from all of us. You can hear from the board. But make a decision and move forward. But please, stay with something. Stay with it. And don't deviate from your plan. We've got to see this piece work. So what we continue to refine that work. We continue to know that this is a truly engaging way. Again, Adam Swell didn't come up with it. Problem-based learning has been around for a long time. But I think it's important to have a model, a consistent model that works for teachers, that works for educators, but more importantly, that works for kids. All students, no matter where you're at on the spectrum. So that's an important piece to us. As we continue to do this work, I'll be bringing forward to the board and to our teachers an academic plan that outlines the direction, the deliverables, the outcomes that we would want to be seeing within 2 to 3 years. But I also believe that you have to bring strong professional development. Is it a cost? Is it a short-term cost? Yes, it is. There's no doubt about it. But if we believe in this, I truly believe the short-term cost will show huge benefits down the road in our students because of the engagement, because of the skills of, as Chris was talking about earlier, presenting and being held accountable to your thinking, where our community becomes a part of our schools, where business, industry partners, university partners come to our table, not in generally when education asks for a partner, they ask like this and asking for money in return. That's not what we're looking for. We're looking for a true partner to say, come in, work with us, bring your problems. And this occurs. I've seen it personally. I've witnessed it when I was a chief academic officer in Adams 12. Partners coming to the table to solve their problems, to solve the problems of industry, to solve the problems of universities. From STEM Lab at Adams 12 having 2 industry partners to over 400 industry partners right now. I mean, and they are movers and shakers. But these people expect something in return. They expect to be listened to. They expect to truly be a partner. They expect to be working with our students, giving them information. But they also expect that the students are bringing that information to that next level for them. I'm talking about kindergartners. I'm talking about students who are receiving specialized instruction. I'm talking about ELL students. This instructional model is good for all students. Anytime a student is more engaged with their learning, I find that is a huge plus. So with that direction, as we continue to move, as teachers began this movement, we're trying to bring greater structure to it so everybody knows where we're at, where we're going with those pieces. An aspect that's critical to it are the PBL coaches. PBL coaches are individuals who are going to be directly connecting with our industry, business, and university partners. Because I'm not going to put this on the backs of our teachers to say, go out, get all of these people, still teach your class, put on problem-based learning panels, because that's a very important piece to this. Is students... Problem-based learning, it's not a singular event that occurs. Oh, let's go do our PBL. No, it's a part of the entire unit. It starts with the standards. We don't bring anything else to the table except for our standards. We plan our units, and we've already laid that foundation this year, especially for our elementary teachers. We're expanding it into Hadley as we speak. We had 2 sessions last week with Hadley teachers. But the PBL coaches, they're the ones who are reaching out to these other university partners, business partners, to bring them in. They also help set the planning for the PBL, but also setting the panel. So students, as they're going through this unit of study, understanding exactly what they needed to know, understand, and be able to do based off the standards, they're also solving the problems of industry, universities, and business partners. Real-world experiences. But the amazing piece, and where I think this model differentiates from others, is this panel concept, where students have to present their thinking. They have to bring their thinking to the table and present to a true panel of experts. Again, I've seen it from a kindergarten level, and I've seen it at a high school level. And at times, it's a game changer for kids. because kids are being asked by professionals in the field, why did you think this way? What research did you do on this? How is this going to solve the problem? At times we have to work with our industry partners to tone it down a little, but the feedback is incredible. It's a game changer for kids because they're thinking, and that's what we want them to be able to do, is to be experiencing that type of thinking all the time. Our units are based off of problem-based. It's a exciting opportunity for our teachers to look at this differently, but more importantly, for our students to engage in the work. But I need to really reiterate, it's grounded in the standards. This isn't about just cute little activities. This is not about just going out and doing projects. That's not what it's about. It's about authentic, real-world opportunities for students. I need problem-based learning coaches to support and be able to help our teachers create this environment that allows for industry, business, and university partners to come to the table. I need PBL coaches to help vet the kids when they go to panel. It is a tremendous amount of work, and we can't ask our teachers to be able to do that. So I will be posting for those problem-based learning coaches, and board would take action on those during the personnel report and during the budget in coming weeks and months. How I'm paying for it, because I have board members in my head all the time as I'm thinking about these things. Karen, from her teaching and learning budget, we've reduced her budget by over $208,000. My budget, which is much less, was reduced as well. That will be that ongoing cost that we would pay for those two coaches. So it is a cost neutral. You can see it in the board or the finance committee's budget now, where that cost was coming from. The majority of that cost for her, for Karen's budget, was out of that professional development side of things, how to support the teachers. We believe this professional development authentic, and it goes back to the research around Learning Forward. Learning Forward is an organization dedicated to professional development. They believe in that authentic, planning-based professional development, that it's truly grassroots. Teachers are learning in the moment how this all comes together. Problem-based learning coaches are critical to the next step as we go down this path. Questions?
How do you measure a successful PBL coach?
By the business, university, and industry partners that they're bringing in, growing the program, vetting the panels themselves, support by the teachers. The teachers say, you know what, it wasn't one more thing on my desk, on my plate. It was about a cohesive, aligned connection to our standards. That's how I'll be vetting them. And then the quality of that students are bringing to the panel. It has to increase over time. As we told a small group a couple of weeks ago, your first panel, it's going to struggle probably. But we've got to keep getting better with them. And kids do. Kids absolutely rise to the occasion, like we all do. And feedback's an important aspect of it. So that's how I'd measure the impact they're making, is the number of university, business, and industry partners that are coming to us over time, the level of panels that students are, the presentations that students are bringing to the panels, and from our teachers.
Let me restate it a different way. Like our teachers and our members are saying, make decisions, stick with it, don't change every year. Are we saying a good PBL coach should be successful after ramping up? You know, there's going to be learning phase, right? You know, there's going to be.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to, but we expect by the third year, this thing is up and running, good. We're getting good feedback from our teachers, from our peer PBL coaches. I don't know how the review process is going to work. We're seeing organizations come in and peer and the students are in their classrooms are accelerating this. So we're seeing PBL coach is going to be successful in 3 years.
I see this as an ongoing cost, and that's how I've budgeted for it, right. That it's an ongoing cost that people. Yeah, I think in 3 years we should be at a very significant at a much higher level of implementation than the first year. Obviously, we should be seeing PBLs that are happening within every unit, as opposed to first year we're asking teachers to try it twice, once in the first semester, once in the second semester.
Yeah. It sounds like it's very integral into your vision. So it sounds like you're going to have personal guidelines, I guess. And again, after a year, you're going to see this, and you know our role is to not micromanage those teachers, but understand that you're being successful in those visions. And from a community, are those visions paying rewards to our students?
Mm-hmm.
So next year, we're going to see again when these come up. Are they successful? What is your plan for the following year? What's the next step? So,
in 2 to 3 weeks, you will see what we've titled the 21st Century Teaching and Learning Model. It is a comprehensive, I think currently roughly 20 pages that detail each section of it and connecting to what we've been doing.
Yeah.
To the workshop model, that's critical to all of our instructional practices, to assessment, that formative assessment that continues to be one of the hallmarks of great instructional practices. You will see those connections and you'll see alignment. To me, that's an important piece for our educators and our community to see, is that things just don't sit off over here and over here, but that it has a true alignment and what we do matters and our time matters.
Well, is this being posted internally first?
It is. All right. With that, I'm done.
Okay. Thanks, Paul. Moving on to board reports.
I have a couple of things. I wanted to read an email, actually, that came from, since we were in Hadley, and there were going to be teachers there, although math, but there's some connection with some students. That I was a part of a conversation with a parent who a year or so ago came to board and talked about the science program at Hadley and Mr. Shanahan and spoke with Karen. And so there was an email that went out and there was a follow-up from the science department chair at Glenbard West where most of our kids matriculate. So I thought since we were here that I would read this because I think sometimes we don't always hear from the folks that are actually connecting with our teachers here. So he wrote, as a science department chair, I work closely with the teachers, administration, and board leadership of District 41 to determine the proper placement for Hadley students when they come to Glenbard West. This is a very complicated process based on student data and confirmed by the strong relationships that Hadley teachers have developed with their students. Based on my experience, and there was a comment about the concern of kids being, ready to go to the science program, in particular at West. And he wrote, as department chair, based on my experience, it is inaccurate to say that Hadley students are not prepared for the Glenbard West curriculum. Our team works very well together, and I appreciate their hard work, Hadley's teachers. As the demands of the next generation science standards grow, I am excited to continue our work in the future. And then he offered, personal conversation. So I want to share that because I think we sometimes miss that connection that our district has worked really hard to create between the matriculation of our kids through eighth grade and then up to Glenbard West and our Glenbard Consolidated District, the work that Karen's been doing. So I just wanted to share that as a kind of a data point and important. The other thing I wanted to share is I went to the Lens had a park meeting, for the assessments, and it was a meeting last Wednesday, I think it was, and I brought this for Dr. Gordon so that Paul could have the materials. But just a couple of highlights. This meeting was called in part because the superintendents in DuPage County have come together with concerns about the park assessments, not so much what the assessment is meant to do, but how it's going to get rolled out. And I know we've talked about this a little bit at the board as well. Well, it was an excellent meeting, and they had representatives from two unit districts and then an elementary middle district similar to ours from Keeneyville. And then this woman, Robin Stearns, who's the executive director of Advance Illinois, who looks, is an organization, not-for-profit, that looks at the whole issue of assessment and testing. And a couple of things I wanted to mention that, you know, impact us. First of all, Dr. Larson, District 87, was the superintendent that spearheaded the conversation among superintendents. So I think that bodes well for us in terms of our district as a feeder in 89, too. But there were a couple of things that came up with the change in what he called No Child Left Behind flexibility, or this choice. There's going to be some changes in particular. Number one is Title I schools, of which we have one, right, Churchill?
Correct.
No longer are going to need to set aside 20% of our funds for SES, which is a lot of money, which is that support
tutoring
and all that, right? So that we can choose as a district now to have more autonomy to put those dollars where maybe we feel they should go instead of being dictated through that mandate. The other thing I wanted to mention is that adequate yearly progress, you know, to this year is our 100% mark, you know, and of course everybody knows that that's an unrealistic mark to make in terms of all kids achieving at 100%. This coming year, for the first year, it's going to be a 300-point system based on three areas, but the first year it's just 100 points for each of two areas in terms of how we do. Number one is proficiency in terms of student learning. And the second 100 points, 0 to 100, will be given for shrinking the achievement gap or growth, academic growth for students. So I will do a quick summary on this. I didn't have a chance to do it, but I will. But the other important takeaway, and I've got the business card from the analytics superintendent from, is it 204?
203.
203, yeah.
Timothy.
Tim, he sat at my table. And so I asked him, I said, so tell, you know, there's a lot of concern in our district, and mine included, with how long the PARC test is, you know, how long it is. And he said, from a psychometric standpoint, that the longer the test, the more specific the information is then given for each individual student. So the value of the length of the test is that you can really drill down for where students' needs are to be found. That's the purpose behind it. But PARC has also recognized that, you know, the length of these tests is not is unwieldy. So that's some of what Dr. Larson and the others are working on. So just really interesting conversation. I think it's important for us, even though it was geared toward high school, for us to have some voice in that and also know what's going on. So I'll do a quick, you know, summary so we can have that in the record.
Erica, could I leverage? But bounce on that a little bit, Paul. And I don't know if some of the comments you were talking about were some of the, there was a pretty big article in the Chicago Tribune. Mm-hmm. What is that? What those things were tied to?
The article in the Trib talked about the PARC assessments and the rollout, and so yes, it had a lot. You know, some, a lot of what we talked about that night, or was presented to us, was around how the assessment is built. You know, the concerns with it, and the other piece that Paul has is the letter that the superintendent sent to Dr. Cook, yeah, who's the state superintendent for ISBE.
But there was a lot of changes in terms of ratings and scales and minority distributions.
Right, and that's some of going from AYP and No Child Left Behind to
right.
PARC assessment and this point system. So, you know, I know that Karen has been keeping her eye on this because there's nothing I say that she hasn't already, you know, talked about or that, but I think it's good for boards aligned to this, you know, with 87, that board supporting Dr. Larson to go forward and do this kind of work, and for us to be apprised of it as well. So.
And one of the pieces that the high school superintendents are very concerned about, and the unit superintendents, the high school level, how many assessments are too many for their juniors, and there is conversation that the state would no longer fund the ACT and replace it with the PARC. The huge concern at the high school level, though, because the colleges have not accepted PARC as the entrance exam. So as Illinois, the legislators are having that conversation. High school principals are saying, hey, can we slow down here? Because there is going to be assessment after assessment after assessment for our juniors in that spring. And literally, I think somebody said there's like a five-day window between these big, big assessments. From AP exams to ACT to PARC, all high stakes for generally your juniors and seniors. So what does that look like for kids? ultimately, I mean, that's I applaud the high school principals or superintendents for really pushing that conversation, and for Chris Cook, Superintendent Cook, to be really looking at this and supporting it as well and pushing it with the legislators. It will have a major impact.
Well, it'd be interesting, Paul. I know that we field tested in some of our grades,
yes.
So that'll be interesting to see that report back from the teachers and how that went, and you know if there's some of the takeaways were similar to the ones we're seeing at the other level. So, you know, just something for you know us to keep our eye on.
Yeah, and again with the elementary districts, one of the many things the superintendents at the elementary districts and some of our unit and high school districts is the lack of technology in our rural communities. So we're going to go back to pencil and paper on park.
Which defeats the purpose.
It really does, because you're not going to turn it around. That's a big impetus of park is actually the data gets turned around as opposed to taking it in March and then seeing it in late July and doing something with that data. So there's a lot to be worked through with park. We're very fortunate to have the technology we do, but we're not like other districts, especially our more rural districts.
The other thing, and I know board members get emails from Lend, like Paul does too, but the one that Peg Agno sent out with regard to the Senate Education Funding Advisory Committee, this is another attempt to try and to look at education funding across the state and create a more balanced approach. Was pretty interesting, and what Peg, I asked her some questions about it. What she said was this: it's highly unlikely that the bill will move forward very far this spring because they're almost out of session. But she says, I do believe it'll be the framework for further school funding conversation. So to get ahead of the curve is important for us, and to get us all thinking about the consequences of such a change. I just want to point out something that was on one of the tables in here, and that is, they identified all of our districts, and then it's a weighted system that they're looking at. Well, they'll give a percentage, a 0.25, 0.50, et cetera. But I was pretty surprised that when I looked at this, without the hold harmless, which means if you're affected negatively, the first year of this new budget would not affect you. But if it did, we would lose 77% of our funding from the state. And 87, 44, 89, all of our districts. So, I know we feel like sometimes at the state of Illinois, like, they'll never get to them, they'll get to it. But I feel like there's a different, and Peg, who's been down there for years, Agnos, who's the executive director of Lend, feels like there's a different feel for this. So this is the reform act that we got. It'd be worth taking a peek at, and just for us to maybe have some conversation around with you, Paul, and how we might give voice to that. So
absolutely.
That's it.
Any other reports? I have one I wanted to share that I was able to attend the it's called the Student Recognition Convocation at Glenbard West, and it's for students that maintain a high honor status. And it was May 7th, and these were some opening remarks that Peter Monahan, the Glenbard West principal, gave at that. And since there's so many teachers in here, I think the one thing you should all know is there's an awful lot of D41 kids that are getting recognized at that. And it didn't happen by accident, because these kids have to get it through all the different levels of all the classes. So they have to be good students in all of them. But when I heard this, I thought about all the changes that we're dealing with in building things, this room, and planning for the future. And I thought it was something good to keep in mind. So I asked Mr. Monahan if it'd be okay if I took a part of it and read it. And that's what I'm going to do. It's very short. He says, Ralph Waldo Emerson, noted American intellectual from the early 1900s, said that enthusiasm is the mother of effort, and without it, nothing great was ever achieved. I would like you to consider that statement for a minute and let it sink in. This sentiment is both simple and complex at the same time. We might say that enthusiasm and motivation are what propel action, so the concept is sort of a no-brainer. However, I would suggest to you that there's a deeper level to this relationship. Those who achieve at a high level, who instill effort into their activities, understand that it begins with enthusiasm. Results do not bring enthusiasm. Rather, enthusiasm brings results. That's why we must instill enthusiasm into our daily lives. This can be difficult because we do not always feel enthusiastic. Life can bring disappointment. That is when we rely on the enthusiasm of others. I would suggest to the adults who work with kids and raise them
then modeling enthusiasm is vital. A high level of enthusiasm will usually result in a higher degree of effort. As principal of Glenbard West, let me tell you that the effort and enthusiasm are absolutely essential. These are very things that connect us to each other. Enthusiasm leads to effort, and effort leads us to something bigger than any of us. And I thought when I saw that, that is a bit of what we will need to take forward as a challenge. Is it isn't, enthusiasm doesn't come from the results. We need to get the people who are enthusiastic and make sure that they're helping achieve the results. And with a lot of things you're going to have to do over the next year with planning, I think that's going to be something that we're going to have to acknowledge and make sure that we get that at all the different levels, from teachers, students, parents, community members. We're going to need some enthusiasm, and I think that showed up in the listening tour as well. So
I thought I would share that.
Any other reports?
I can do finance really quick. Basically, we talked about two things in the finance committee. Number one was some adjusted bids, or three bids, that the low bidder had not understood the nature of the bid and had been asked to do these, and we ended up taking the second lowest bid. The other thing we talked about was we talked at great length about the budget, the budgeting process, the breakdown between the different schools, the different departments in terms of how those budgets are created and how the numbers are borne out. So, more discussion on budgets for the next time.
Okay.
I also have another very short meeting. I attended the PEP meeting, which is, I always screw the name up, Partners
Educational Progress.
Partners for Educational Progress.
Thank you. Partners for Educational Progress. And that is the district's 501(c). It's actually for the high school and the feeder district. So, I was talking to my counterpart at ADI as I talked to you about what they were doing with kindergarten and, you know, having extending kindergarten for another year, another hour, and then having some additional breakout time as needed in their tender program. Paul was going to talk to Dr. Purdue about that. So that's all I got.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, too. Any other reports? Okay, moving on. Discussion items. The Hadley math adoption.
I'll hand it over to Karen to.
Top of their heads, which has been amazing because then they've adopted it to Common Core as well.
But for all of this time, we've always been wanting to still have that textbook at the backbone. And so even though we haven't really used one in the past 6 years, we know that parents have really wanted one. We know that students would really like a resource at home, because there's some things that, as much as we try to give them, some things just aren't possible without having that structure of the textbook. And so in 2011-2012, we felt like we were on our road to the Common Core. In the following year, we felt like we had fully implemented Common Core. We were eligible for proposing a new textbook series a few years ago, but we decided to hold off on that just because the Common Core was so new. PARC wasn't even in existence at all at first. We really felt like we wanted to wait. But now we've come to the point where we've done some research, we've started piloting things, and we feel like we are successfully launching a new curriculum. And so this year we piloted two different curriculums: Connected Mathematics Project 3, otherwise known as CMP3 typically, and Larson's Big Ideas. And we've done Connected Math was mainly in 6th grade, while Big Ideas was implemented partially in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade through various teachers. Not every teacher has piloted it, but every teacher has seen those resources and used them in a variety of ways in their classroom. We also did an assessment evaluation tool just to make sure that it was all aligned to Common Core, and we did assess both of them. And I can say that the entire department agrees that we have decided that we would really like Larson's Big Idea as our curriculum for next year.
So the key characteristics of the support materials we look for aligned to the Common Core and the mathematical practices. Mathematical practices such as modeling, communicating with reasoning. We needed something that was adaptable for all learners. In every class, in every grade, we have a wide range of readiness and level of learners. We needed something that was flexible enough that we could help students succeed and grow no matter what level they were at. Technology-centered, and a resource for teachers, parents, and students.
This next slide shows some of our favorite things being teachers, what we feel like Big Ideas is bringing towards us. And I would say that almost all of us, or all of us, would agree that the very first bullet point of editable teacher resources is huge. Most textbook series, when they give you their files, they're giving you everything on PDF files online because they want you to take what they have and that's it. Where Big Ideas, every single activity, lesson, worksheet, anything, quiz, test, everything, you can download into Microsoft Word. We can take it, we can adapt it and make it harder. We can take out questions, add questions. It's a great backbone and a great structure, but I feel like every single teacher, every single class, or even adapted to any individual student, has its own needs. And so I love that a textbook company is letting us use those resources and adapting how it fits our students. And so we felt like that was one of the key things that I just don't see in other things. When we were piloting CMP, there were so many great parts of it. Well, we wanted to pick and choose, but with a PDF file, you either have to use it exactly how it was, or create the entire thing on Microsoft Word and adapt it then. And that's just a lot of time, and we felt like energy was wasted by doing that transferring over, versus with it being adaptable and editable, it was right there for us. And so we also feel like there's differentiation ideas for every single activity and for every single lesson. It gives you ideas on how to help your ELL students or any students who are in the RTI process. It gives centered questions of what works well for those individual students. And it also helps with the advanced students as well. With every single section of Big Ideas, it gives enrichment activities. And what I love is that a lot of times when you say enrichment, a lot of people think of that as just bumping up into the next grade level. But since we're in Common Core, it's very important that sixth grade students are enhancing their sixth grade Common Core standards. And so that's what Big Ideas does. It takes the sixth grade Common Core standards and enhances them and enriches them, but it's not just all of a sudden popping into different grades or completely giving them something they've never seen before. It's taking that topic and taking it one step further. And so it really helps with all types of learners. Pretty much, as Joe was saying, we have a wide spreading on Ellen. And
and it helps with any level of students that we have in both the advanced classes and in our regular classes.
And as a for the students, excellent resources and support for students. There's graphic organizers the students can use online, practice quizzes and tests. Again, additional skills practice will get that differentiation based on the level of student. The one thing that I really love about it is they have video tutorials tied to the lessons. So the students can go home, watch them. Parents have watched them to help their students. And it really helps get them to be more independent learners. So that's a really good part of it. There's projects in there, things like financial literacy projects, work-to-school projects. The other thing I love about Big Ideas, and I've been actually piloting it since last year. So I re-upped because I felt I thought that highly of it. But the workbook has real-world activities. So they're discovery-type activities that the students can connect to a new topic or concept. Real-world-based, things like they discovered percent decrease by looking at the salmon decrease caused in the Columbia River Basin by the dams and turbines, which they love that stuff. So again, it's discovery learning. There's online manipulatives that we use in class. The students can use them at home, as well as hands-on manipulatives for those hands-on learners.
These are some of our major highlights of the recommendation. When we were looking for a resource, we really wanted a primary resource. We didn't want an entire curriculum to take over everything, because all those teachers have put in tons of hours of work. They have created so much, and we didn't just want to toss that out the window because it was rigorous. Was tied to Common Core. It was stuff that they put in their heart and soul into. And so we wanted a material that would help us supplement and kind of guide us, and so that we could pull from our own materials and use that at the same time. And that's exactly what Big Ideas has to offer us. We've already created curriculum maps for next year for all of the different grade levels with using Big Ideas. And so we've seen what we have as our resources and what we can pull in. We also feel like since PBL is such a big push that this is a perfect curriculum, and as Joe was saying, there are real-world applications already embedded that I feel like we can take one of those types of topics and create some of those PBLs out of those real-world activities that they're already providing for us. It also supports small group instructions. I know many of the teachers that are piloting it right now, we've started to do some of the menu approach where we're guiding individual groups of students and supplementing with Big Ideas enrichment activities or review activities and all sorts of other parts of it, and we can all do it at the same time. And so Big Ideas helps us. It has just a plethora of resources that is really, you could really find anything on there. The other thing is the fact that it is a 6-year online subscription, and so we really wanted the online subscription because the first thing is to get a textbook, and then all of a sudden in 2 or 3 years when PAR comes out for real and we have the first test, all of a sudden the textbooks start revising everything. And we didn't want to get stuck with a textbook all of a sudden that is old and the second year that we were using it. And so by going online, Big Ideas has said that they will automatically update whatever they're changing, and they have been working with PAR very closely, so they should already be on that track. And I feel like they are completely aligned, but everything changes. And for the fact that we do have online then, anything will automatically change in the teacher textbook and in the student textbook. And we feel like the students really do need to learn how to use a textbook. I think we send off our students to Glenbard West with a lot of great knowledge in math, but unfortunately for the past 6 years, we haven't really taught them to use a textbook at all, because we don't have a textbook. And so I know that is one of those things that we would love to incorporate more with those videos online and everything to do with how to read a little bit more of the textbook, because we haven't provided that for our students at this point in time.
Yeah, obviously that's an important skill, being able to self-learn through. Teacher quotes.
from my colleagues. The edible, and I don't know who wrote these, the edible resources and the big ideas has helped me provide differentiated practice for all my learners. Some enjoy the self-correcting practice they get from the puzzle time activities, while others are challenged by the enrichment problems. So again, that built-in differentiation. Big Ideas provides equity for all and encourages deeper thinking. There is a lot of higher level critical thinking that you can get to. Big Ideas is aligned with PARC, and the online content is flexible and dynamic, and Big Ideas develops a growth mindset towards math. Student quotes. Let me preface this by saying I surveyed my students anonymously through Socrative. I did not bribe them. I did not prompt them. The only prompt I gave was, tell me what you think of Big Ideas. One student said, I love the online textbooks. They're easy to use and have fun activities. I like them because the activities give a little background about the lesson and what to expect. So, again, the discovery learning before we fill in the blanks for them if needed. I like Big Ideas because I like the lessons and activities that help me learn. I also like the online text because I can access it from home. I like Big Ideas because if I don't understand some problems, I can look up a tutorial and it will make more sense to me. So, some real positive comments.
Here is the cost analysis, obviously this is just approximation because of the fact that we wouldn't need all of our numbers of all of our students, we don't have that quite yet. I do want to point out the fact that we do have workbooks up there. This would be a one-time use, so this would be a renewable thing every year that we would have to have, and we would love to try this next year. I know, Joe, you can even talk more about this. Joe uses the workbook all the time in his classes.
The activities, a lot of the activities are pen and pencil. The students like it. It helps them keep organized. We pull homework from there. So I think it's really been a win having those consumable workbooks for the students to have.
So our proposal was to have the workbooks for the on-grade level students because that's a great way to help them organize and the homework. And we're not editing quite as much in the on-grade level classes as we would in more of the advanced classes. The advanced classes will use more editing, which then we wouldn't really be using the workbook if we're editing the workbook. And so we're proposing just for the grade level classes, and then we would analyze it at the end of next year to make sure that that was something that we still wanted to spend money on. So that's the additional cost of the workbook, and that would be a every year occurrence if that's what we had thought was more beneficial. So that is our textbooks. We are really excited for this, and we would love to share or answer any questions, or you can ask any of the audience as well.
Yes.
The menu focuses on more of a small group instruction, and so we do a mini lesson for the entire class. And once again, this is only happening in some of the classrooms right now, so we do a mini lesson of about 20 minutes. And then they break off into different types of activities that they like to do. So some of them are technology-centered, some of them are more hands-on, some of them are more paper and pencil. And then the teacher can then group smaller students to make sure each group of students is working, instead of the traditional style of making sure all 30 students are working.
Are there any... I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry. Most topics are across 2 days, so you're checking in with each student in at least once in that two-day process.
Any board member questions?
I have a quick question. As much as parents would love for their students to come home and say, here's my textbook and I'm going to do this tutorial and all that, if parents don't know what the advantages are, then we can't help our kids at the high school level too, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So is there a plan to orient parents to the new curriculum? And what is that? How would it roll out?
I think the most important part for us to establish would be an open house. We would have to discuss how to get to those parents that might not be at an open house, but I would assume that we should have either, depending on how family does an open house, because we switch it, but that would be a large component of it. And most teachers, I think all the math teachers do, send out email blasts to all of their parents as well, and so that would be a great educational tool as well. But I agree that the parents don't know about it, the kids might not necessarily.
It helps support it.
Especially since it is an online resource.
Are the video tutorials similar to Khan Academy? I know that's something that when Carl was here, his teachers used a lot of, which was great because you could come home and then revisit that, and you know, it became kind of a habit to look at that stuff. Mm-hmm. So are they similar to that?
It is very similar.
Just one concept and they work right through it.
Yep.
Well, the big idea for the ABC students that we've given at the elementary school ABC students, because what we have been doing right now at the elementary, are they using the same curriculum?
They are not using the same curriculum.
ABC uses the same curriculum. They have to learn what they're doing.
Can we put the last slide back up, Mike? So the total cost is the $67,693, and that includes the six-year subscription for the textbooks. So it's almost a six-year cost. Is that what we're...
Yeah, the only thing that would change would be that almost $6,000 for the workbook. That would be the only thing. Otherwise, that's the six-year online textbook.
So it's not an annual upgradable cost. It's a six-year. This is the cost
one
for
time.
One-time cost for 6 years.
The only recurring cost then would be if we continue to use workbooks.
And this is going to be used as a baseline text, mm-hmm. and the materials that the staff has already created apparently for the last 6 years, which, frankly, I find a little interesting, but they're going to be using those materials in addition to the textbook.
Correct.
As well. So this will be
the
start, and then and the materials that have already been developed will be supplemental to individual classes, individual students.
Yep.
Okay. And this was piloted 7th and 8th, or 6th, 7th? I didn't catch that.
The big idea is it's piloted in some sort in 6th, 7th, and 8th.
For the last year or 2 years? You said 2 years.
Partially, it's been like a year and a half.
Year and a half. So I've been piloting it in my classes since winter of last year.
So piloting means out of how, of all the classrooms, how many, roughly what percentage? Like one per grade or?
It is more in sixth grade. Otherwise, 7th and 8th grade is one per grade. But sixth grade is had more.
So I guess what I'm getting at is the staff will be comfortable with this selection because it's most folks have seen it all. I see a lot of heads nodding yes back there. So
okay. We're all pretty much using, while I started piloting it, they're all pretty much using resources from Big Ideas.
Because right now, even if you're not a piloting teacher, Big Ideas did allow anyone of us to sign up for it. And so all the teachers right now have their current teacher resources for whatever class they're teaching. So even if they weren't a piloting teacher, I know Algebra has still, even though they weren't piloting, they still started incorporating some of Big Ideas activities and lessons into their curriculum as well.
Okay.
Can I point... I want to poke at somebody behind you, Tom, about the CMP3 is still used at elementary, and I want to marry that with a couple points that you guys have said before. Is when we have a wide range of learners. You have a wide range of learners, and now you have two different learnings curricula. I don't know if it's style or curricula. How are you going to marry those two? When those kids come in sixth grade and they've been taught CMP3, and I don't know how different they are. You know, 2 plus 2 is always going to equal 4 most of the time, but how are you going to get that philosophy from CMP3 to Big Ideas on top of students that are already coming in with a wide range of skill sets?
So one of the pieces at the elementary level, we use everyday math as the primary resource. And they're both, the programs are built off of a constructivist theory around mathematics, where students are engaging with the math, really working with it, small groups, as we indicated, doing a quick mini lesson to kick it off. But the theory, the mathematical theory behind it, Big Ideas in Everyday Math and CMP3, which we're using for the AEC students, all are constructivist theory mathematical programs where students are truly engaging with the topic, working with the topic, and trying to understand and how to apply the thinking behind math and what, for instance, around number sense, what do numbers actually mean? Not that it's a 5, but what is that 5 or that 25 or that a million really make up, and how do I know that? And what manipulatives, what other uses, could I show that? So it really is that whole constructivist theory. So we're not deviating our theories on how to instruct around mathematics. It is a program as opposed to a theory.
So we're not expecting new Hadley parents coming in to say, now my whiz kid math is all turned around backwards because
I learned lattice mathematics and how to do lattice at one point, and now you're never using lattice again. No. Yeah. No, you're going to see those same instructional approaches used throughout our continuum. Great question, though.
Okay.
Great question.
Well, that's some of what I observed in a couple of the classrooms with the math menu. And it was that they had a tutorial, then they had to write about it in order to deconstruct it to understand the concept. And then they had to go back and do the worksheet on it and then work with the teacher. So, you know, as I was listening to you, Char, I was trying to think about that fourth, fifth grade class I was in and how it might mirror some of the same concepts. So it is a good question because we do want to make sure that as they rise, right, they're taking the theory and understand that piece. It's that the program is set up differently, but we're still teaching the same theoretical basis. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I had one thing. Karen gave this presentation in our finance committee back in April 28th. And one of the things we recognized in her presentation was how much teacher involvement there was in this decision and the piloting that you guys have been doing for two years, actually. And we thought it was important to hear from you guys. You guys did a great job with the presentation, and the support is great to see. And I think it's important for the parents to hear that, how much you guys were involved. And it wasn't a one-day collaboration. This has been going on for some time. And I thank you for that, and it was a great presentation.
Any other questions, comments?
Just one technical one, and you said some of this data is getting downloaded to Microsoft Word. Are we going to be able to do this in our big Mac atmosphere we had?
Not Macs,
Chrome. And all the technology, I mean, we're not?
Yeah, they should convert.
Okay.
Word, Chrome.
Okay. Thanks, Karen. Thanks, Amy. Thanks, Joe.
Do you feel like are there kids in the district who might not have access to internet? Will there be a disadvantage? I mean, that's not my kids, but I'm just thinking a little broader to some of the kids that we have at Lincoln. I don't think they have internet at home. So, you know, they're probably a little bit at a disadvantage to begin with. Is there any way to get some textbooks or something for people to...
Right, that is
going to be out to see some textbooks because we know we don't have kids who don't have access.
But with the one-on-one technology, at least in the class, we can still be showing them how to access the textbook in class. But, yeah, we are saying.
And you still would want them to have, because the future park assessment is online and they have to learn to navigate a mathematics tool, and we try to see how we do that.
Okay, thanks for spending some of your Monday night with us. Thanks to the rest of the staff.
Appreciate
it. Here we go. Okay, moving on. The proposed 2014-2015 school board calendar.
Nothing quite as exciting as the big ideas presentation. The dates are there. Very similar. Second and fourth. I don't know if there's much else to say on the excitement of a school board calendar.
Is there any plan to kind of reinstitute when we were having one board meeting a month, not one board meeting
a
one
year.
One board meeting a year, have a difference, like we are here at Hadley.
I'd like that. I thought it was great.
That's up for a board. As long as I can find my glasses and everything else, I can go here. Finance committee, I was struggling a little.
I know that's a lot of work to staff, and maybe the option is to talk to principals, and if they'd like to host a meeting because they have something significant or something they want to share, then I think it'd be great if we could get them.
I actually like that idea. That some of the things that we're talking about, having the principals bring something to the table, and we're at your school 5-7 minutes.
That makes a lot of sense that it's purposeful.
Right, right.
As opposed to...
I got
just
it.
Put it on the camera.
Yeah, and that we're coming.
Yeah. No, I think that's...
Okay.
With goodness.
Is that something we can do by the next meeting, or do we want to leave it somewhat flexible for some of the locations to change?
I would say for next year.
Leave it flexible so the principals can tell us when they want to present and what they want to present.
If you guys
as long as
okay
we
that.
Announce it, in, right. you know, there's a prescribed time. We have
right.
to announce it.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. The Churchill site work.
Bob?
Well, as you know, we went out to bid for the Churchill site work to be completed in anticipation of the building addition for next summer at Churchill. This evening we have Jack Hayes with FQC for us, and Jack is going to present the results of the work that we just recently bid.
Okay, so we went out and went out for three different packages, primarily excavation, paving, and landscaping. And below, there were eight bids for excavation. The low bidder did not meet the requirements of the bid and scope review, so they withdrew their bid or asked to have their bid withdrawn with your permission. And the second low bidder was S&K Excavating for $994,900. And that's the bid that we're recommending. The second package was paving. The low as-red bidder did not include one of the pieces of the scope in their low in their bid. They provided as an alternate. So the low bidder was professional paving, not the bidder that didn't include the full scope. Schroeder Asphalt was the low bidder at $43,440, and that's we're recommending that low bidder. And landscaping, we had another irregularity. The low bidder missed over half the scope of the work, and we estimated, and it became very apparent in our first conversation with her. And we called, and we asked her to call back with her supervisor, and once they did, they have to have their bid well with her permission. The low bidder was very landscaping, and their low bid was their bid was $49,600. So those are the three bids that we went out for. We got the bid results in last Wednesday, presented them to finance, and presented them to discussion. So that scope of work is basically going to get us started at Churchill with all of the primary thing there is the stormwater detention in the north play field area, which will then allow the opportunity to then build the building starting in the spring of next year.
Jack, and just for the record, in finance, you did inform us on two occasions where local businesses were part of the process, but it was just cost, not a positive cost for the project. And you and Bob did work with those local businesses, but it just wasn't going to work out for the benefit of the district.
The underground detention, there's a couple of different approaches to take for that, and the local business was advocating, as they should, for one solution, and the expectation was that would be the low cost solution, and then as it ended up, it was a higher cost solution, so we couldn't go.
And my second point, I guess, if you could just kind of give us. The finance committee is very aware of it, but the walkways and the portables that were under discussion right now.
Oh, sure. Thanks.
So,
we earlier this evening you approved the bids for the relocation of the portables at Forest Glen and Lake. And one of the things that the district has provided in the past is covered walkways to the portable classrooms. And as part of that bid that we approved tonight, going back to when we went out for bid, FGM provided a design for those canopies that would mirror the type of installation that you have in place now. And those bids came in and haven't been recommended at this point in time because they came in around $350,000 to provide what would be canopies for, in the longest case, one school year at Forest Glen. And in some cases, it would only be a temporary canopy. So we've been identifying alternative solutions for what we can provide as a canopy for those walkways from that permanent type solution, which was designed by FGM, to a scaffold type covered walkway that you might be familiar with if you've walked into any kind of construction site in downtown Chicago, where you walk through the walkway and it's a typical scaffold, the cover, to a aluminum covered walkway with posts that you might an idea of where you might come across that, but it's a shorter term, maybe less durable solution than a permanent, but that meets all the wind load and criteria, but it's not something you want to put in place for 25 years or something like that. But so we've been looking at those different price points with scaffolding on the low end and the permanent solution on the high end, and so that's where we're at.
So, and then the reason I bring that up is in the finance, we're trying to balance finance against the aesthetic, against our neighbors and to the schools and the principals. And,
right.
You know, that's going to be a fine balance of right. You put up bare bones steel or, you know, you put underground tunnels or whatever. We're not going there, but, you know, we want to have that fine balance between something that's going to be temporary but something that's not ostentatious.
Yes.
So, and for the record, I want to just bring that up.
And really, one of the things to keep in mind in this situation is that the entire site where these canopies are going to be going into place is going to be a construction site. So, the whole site will look like a construction area. You know, it'll be fenced in and secure, but so the canopies need to have, I think their primary need, at least from what our conversation has been about function, which is to provide a way for the children to get back and forth from the portables to the permanent facility under somewhat of a cover. And now we're going to take a look at the scaffold solution and try to come up with a way to aesthetically maybe make it be a little more acceptable.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions, comments for Jack at this point? What? Thanks, Jack.
Thanks.
Okay, filling a board member vacancy.
Unfortunately, and congratulations to Sam and his family, but unfortunately for us, Sam and his family are going to be moving to Palm Springs, Florida, and Palm Beach, Florida, in the very near future, sometime mid to late June. With that, Sam submitted his letter of resignation to the board secretary, which means within 45 days that we need to fill that position. Tonight we're going to be going into closed session very shortly, where the board will only speak about being able to reach out to possible candidates. When we come out, we will talk about the process. The process will not be discussed in closed session. What board members can speak about are individuals they would like to reach out to. When we come back in open session, we will discuss the process that the board will use going forward, either following the policy that speaks to this or if there is some deviation from that policy. So that we will be going into closed session, but we will be coming back out to talk about the timeline in the process itself. But with that, any comments, Sam, or others?
Not at this time.
Okay. I like it.
Accolades and all that later.
Yep.
Or not.
Oh, yeah.
So with that,
okay. Upcoming meetings, the May 23rd, 2014 Board of Education regular meeting, 7:30 p.m., Central Services Office. June 9, 2014 Board of Education regular meeting, 7:30 p.m., also at Central Services Office. And June 23rd, 2014 public hearing and regular meeting, 7:15 p.m., time change, at the Central Services Office. Any other matters to be considered by the board at this time? Any public participation at this time?
None.
Okay, seeing none. the closed session. The board has determined that there's a need to adjourn to closed session to discuss the employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the district or legal counsel for the district, including hearing testimony at a complaint lodged against an employee or against legal counsel for the district to determine its validity, and also the selection of a person to fill a public office, including a vacancy in public in a public office when the district is given power to appoint under law or ordinance, or the discipline, performance, or removal of the occupant of a public office when the district is given power to remove the occupant under law or ordinance. May I have a motion to adjourn to closed session?
Second.
Motion by Mr. Ellis, second by Mr. Elger. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Buchanski?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Elger?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Yes, as Dr. Gordon said, when the board returns to open session, we'll be discussing the timeline and process for filling the board member vacancy, as well as taking action on the assistant superintendent's employment contract. The time is 9:45, and we're going to adjourn to closed session. Okay, back in open session. The time is 10:39. Moving on, discussion and possible action, the process for filling board member vacancy. The District 41 Policy 270 says as follows. Vacancy on the school board, filling the vacancies, the elective office of the school board member becomes vacant. Before the term's expiration, when any of the following occurs, there are 9 specific events. But the event that is pertinent to our situation or my situation is resignation in writing filed with the Secretary of the School Board. I submitted my resignation letter tonight, which then starts the process. And the process is, whenever a vacancy occurs, the remaining members shall notify the regional superintendent of schools that of said vacancy within 5 days after its occurrence, and shall fill the vacancy until the next regular school board election, at which election a successor shall be elected to serve the remainder of the unexpired term. If the vacancy occurs with less than 868 days remaining in the term, and that is the case in this situation, the person so appointed shall serve the remainder of the unexpired term, and no election, meaning no special election, will be needed to fill the vacancy until the election next spring. Members appointed by the remaining members of the board to fill vacancies shall meet any residential requirements as specified in the school code. The board shall fill the vacancy within 45 days after it occurred by the public vote at a meeting of the board. So 45 days, the clock is now ticking. Immediately following the vacancy on the board will publicize the vacancy and accept resumes from district residents who are interested in filling the vacancy. After reviewing the applications, the board may invite the prospective candidates for personal interviews to be conducted during duly scheduled closed session meetings. So that is the process as outlined by our policy. Does anybody want to add anything?
The only thing I would add is just kind of working backwards, we know that Sam's resignation will take effect June 10th. To close out any business from June 9th. June 9th would be his last board meeting. And then the board would be looking to seat the new person on June 23rd. So just giving you kind of that context for a timeline to work from.
So then we would be voting on June 9th most likely for this?
It can be the 9th or the 23rd. That you take action, but that would be something we would work with the board's attorney on, exactly which day between the 9th and the 23rd.
I prefer the 9th.
Okay.
This way, then the 23rd.
And that could be the first thing you do that when you walk in on the 23rd, that they would know at that point. You would inform that it's just, when are you going to seat them?
Right.
That, to me, is the important piece, is when do you seat them?
Understood.
Right. And just to be very clear, there are no meetings between the June 9th meeting and the June 23rd meeting.
Correct.
Okay.
And then the next meeting after that is August.
Correct.
So
there are no meetings in July, so that's why the process, in theory, that's why the process is starting now.
Yep. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are, as just getting out of the NFL draft, we are on the clock.
Okay, so if anyone... Sorry, Erica,
go ahead. Well, I was going to say, part of the process is the, so taking in applications, so how is this going to be notified to the public in terms of what the dates are? How is that going to be communicated?
So that's what the board has to talk about tonight is, what is your timeline? When would you expect, I mean, if we're following the policy says, you know, members of the community would submit a letter of interest stating why I want to be a board member. So you would have to set out that timeline for everybody to say 5, 10 days, I don't know what the board wants, but you would set that timeline and then you would communicate, what is it you're looking for? Are you looking for a letter of interest? Are you looking for something more or less?
So can I walk that backwards?
Yeah, please.
So June 9th is the decision has been made by the board on who the candidate's going to be, and then June 9th we swear them in, or first thing the 23rd we swear them in.
And it doesn't have to be June 9th. It has to be before June 23rd.
Okay.
So you can have closed sessions
on the
interviews. You can bring candidates in closed session to have those conversations.
Right, that's my only concern with wanting to have this done, if I'm hearing you correctly, having it done and seated by June 9th.
Having the decision made.
Well, that would leave us this week to notify the public and then request, we should give people at least a week to 10 days to submit.
Then
it looks like maybe a week and a half of trying to schedule interviews.
No. Right, so you'll have two meetings. You'll have the Labor Day or Memorial Day meeting and then the June 9th meeting to do interviews in closed session.
This way you don't need a special meeting to do it.
Right, so is one meeting enough? I don't know. Maybe two meetings?
I think we should plan for two meetings.
So you're going to do a special meeting?
No.
No, May 27th and June
9th. Oh, I got you.
To use closed session.
I'm with you. I follow you. So then you'd have to have your application in by May 23rd.
Well, sometime before the...
Yeah, a couple of weeks.
It would be the 23rd, but then you got to give those candidates the opportunity to schedule.
We would have Maureen schedule the people that you select for interviews.
Well, that's true.
So we would have her schedule those at a time. And again, those could be a different closed session.
It doesn't have to be on the 27th or the 9th.
You can go outside of that because it would be considered a special closed session for the interview process to fill a vacancy.
I thought we just had to do it on
No. Don't. The only date you really have to be worried about is June 23rd. That's a really important date to seat the board member. From there, it's pretty much open to our calendars when we can meet. Because I do worry about having a regular board meeting. Mm-hmm. Most of our board meetings seem to be going later, and then to start interviews after that. Not sure if you're giving the community members who are applying their best opportunity to really shine at 11 o'clock at night.
But that's what I know.
I'm not sure you see my best.
This is the real world situation.
See how you act at 1:30 in the morning.
So we can have special meetings at any time just for that specific
purpose. Yes.
I think we should just do special meetings if needed. I mean, we should just
absolutely
go for the 23rd as the deadline date. Start scheduling for the 7th.
27th,
because it's Tuesday. And then June 9th.
Okay.
Make a decision on June 9th.
So one of the things I heard was that you're going to open it up, but you're going to open it up for 10 days. Again, that's conversation for board, because I'm just trying to plan out on the calendar. So starting tomorrow, we would notify the public of here's the vacancy, here's the process, and the first part of that process is, hey, apply within 10 days. Is that something the board's comfortable with?
It's 10 days long. Now,
okay. That's what I want to...
I think it is. It's 13th to 23rd, right, is what we're talking
That's
about.
That's what you'd be... You'd close it on... May 23rd.
It gives 4 days this week, 5 days next week.
Yeah, then any early applicants we can schedule on the 27th.
Yeah.
And any late applicants on the...
So I'm hearing consensus around 10 days?
Yes.
The next one we need to ask about is, what do you want the board... Where do you want community members to submit to the board? Is it a letter of interest? Is it a, you know, 10-page essay? What is it that you, the board members want to be able to review prior to making selections for who comes forward for an interview?
We had a, this happened a few years ago. Was there not a template or a...
I wasn't on the board. Was there some process?
There was a letter of interest.
And I'm fine with there because with that because I think people who are interested in applying are going to have already kind of formed.
We're not looking for would you do the job last 12 years?
No.
But I think, but you know, there's some questions in the guidelines that are some samples on page 3 to 5 in our policy, and this is one we did talk about. And that's the role of school board member, just in general. What do you see the role of that of the board member being, which is a, you know, in a general, but I think can be insightful, too. So that's what we did the last time. It was just a letter of interest.
Okay, a letter of interest, posting this. Again, community members can decide if they want to address those, but those are all, those are questions for board that board members may be asking during the interview process. I just want to be really clear that are we asking them to submit answers to these questions? And we're, I'm hearing no. I'm just hearing it is a letter of interest only.
I would say no, but be prepared to answer these questions and more.
And others.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
These or others, yeah.
Okay, so we've got a 10-day window that will open tomorrow, close on the 23rd, asking community members to submit a letter of interest to the Board of Education, board, and they'll submit them to Maureen Stecker, who's the board's secretary, and she will send them out to the board members.
5 p.m. CST, the 23rd?
Yes, by
5 p.m.
5 p.m. on the 23rd.
CDT?
Yes.
Steve. All right, so just trying to make sure. Okay, any other timeline considerations or guidelines that we need to make sure that the community is aware of?
Well, it doesn't say in here that all board members need to be present at the interview, so my only concern is if we have to schedule outside a closed session, where we typically all are here, you know, be clear about, you know, if it doesn't need to be a quorum for board members, or I don't see that.
I think what I'd push us to do is really find a time for all board members to be present. I will really push.
Yeah.
Us to find that consistent time. I know it's going to be tough, but I feel like it's important.
Saturday's not off the table.
I don't think it should be.
It shouldn't be.
I don't think Saturday
weekends
should
are
be
fair
off.
Game.
Yeah. Okay, I just want to be clear about that.
Nope, I think that's a great question. Any other considerations that the board has regarding the timeline and what they want in return from the potential board members?
It only mentions posts on district website and maybe in the local newspaper. I don't know if this is may do. Doesn't not shall do. So
we'll look at what we can pull off in 10 days, but I think we will try to get it into to the paper and other places as well.
Yeah, I think more.
Absolutely.
E plus.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
I feel like I've got a nice piece to be able to give to Julie and Maureen to be publicizing on the board's behalf tomorrow morning.
Okay. Are we all comfortable with that?
All right.
Okay. All right, action item, the assistant superintendent employment contract. We have a motion to approve the 3-year employment contract for assistant superintendent Karen Carlson as presented.
Motion.
Motion by Mr. Escalante.
Second.
Second by Mr. Elger. Any discussion on this? Okay. Roll.
It's a good financial decision for the district. I'm interested in completing their tenure here and... you know, we've had a lot of discussion about this, but I think it's a good decision for continuity, number one, and it's, as noted in our agenda, financially beneficial to the district as well, so I think it's a win-win.
Okay, anybody else? All right, we're going to have to do a roll call, so Maureen is not here, so Dean, you're going to have to do it, so just call out names.
Okay, so Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. No? Okay. So, Ms. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Vincenzo?
Yes.
And I would say yes. And Sam?
Yes. Okay. Motion carries. Okay. May I have a motion to adjourn the meeting?
Motion.
Motion by Mr. Elger. Second by Mrs. Nelson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Meeting adjourned. 10:54. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody.